Outsmart your excuses. Excuses are for losers. See how. Written by Kelvin W. Nathan. Published by Audiobooks Office. Introduction. Excuses are the most sophisticated lies we tell ourselves. They sound rational, they feel justified, they even masquerade as wisdom. But strip away their polish and every excuse reveals the same truth. Fear, comfort, and a refusal to own your power. Excuses are the invisible hand that quietly steals dreams, sabotages growth, and convinces brilliant people to settle for mediocrity. They are the silent assassins of ambition. And the tragedy is that most people defend them more fiercely than they defend their goals. If you want to understand why some people soar while others crawl, it's simple. Winners outsmart their excuses, losers obey them. It's not about talent, luck, or timing, it's about responsibility. Every success story begins with a decision. I am done lying to myself. Because the moment you stop rationalizing failure, you start authoring your destiny. The abundance mindset isn't a feel-good slogan, it's a weapon. It's the belief that no matter what the world throws at you, you always have a choice. You can't control every circumstance, but you can always control your response. That's where excuses die and power is born. Look around you. Everyone's busy defending their limitations. They'll tell you they're too tired, too late, too broke, too scared, too something. They'll blame the government, the market, their parents, their boss, or fate itself. But the truth is this, if you need an excuse, you'll always find one. The world is full of reasons to quit. The rare few who rise are the ones who stop looking for reasons and started looking for results. They didn't wait to feel ready. They acted, stumbled, learned, and adapted. That's the secret. The winners aren't excuse-free because life was easy. They're excuse-free because they refused to let difficulty become a lifestyle. This book isn't here to comfort you. It's here to challenge you, expose the mental traps holding you back, and hand you the mindset that turns obstacles into opportunity. Every chapter will dissect a common excuse, strip it down to its core illusion, and rebuild your thinking from a foundation of ownership and abundance. You'll learn to recognize the difference between stories that serve you and stories that enslave you. Because once you change your story, you change your strategy. And when your strategy changes, your life follows. Understand this. Excuses don't just cost you money or success. They cost you self-respect. Every time you give in to one, you train your brain to believe you're powerless. You shrink your confidence. You teach yourself that circumstances control you. But every time you act in spite of an excuse, you reclaim territory in your own mind. That's how abundance grows, not from wishing, but from reclaiming control, one decision at a time. There's a voice inside you that knows you're made for more. It's tired of your rationalizations. It's tired of your potential being buried under comfort and fear. This book is that voice turned up to full volume. It will confront you, provoke you, and push you to drop the illusions that keep you small. Because once you stop negotiating with your excuses, you become unstoppable. Welcome to Outsmart Your Excuses. This isn't self-help, it's self-command. From this page forward, there are no more reasons, no more waiting, no more someday. You either own your life or you outsource it. You either make results or you make excuses. The choice is yours, and your future depends on it. To read the complete book, visit our website and get the complete ebook, now available on the website at audiobooksoffice.com. Now let's begin. Chapter 1. The Lie We Tell Ourselves. The most dangerous lie is not the one the world tells you. It's the one you whisper to yourself when no one's listening. It's the story you repeat to justify why you haven't started, why you're not ready, why you couldn't, shouldn't, or wouldn't. It sounds harmless, even reasonable. It sounds like protection, like realism, like caution. But underneath all those excuses is fear pretending to be logic. We tell ourselves these lies to stay comfortable, to stay safe, to stay exactly where we are, and that is how most people slowly die while still breathing. Excuses don't always come dressed as laziness. Often they show up disguised as intelligence. We say things like, "I'm waiting for the right time," or "I'll start when I'm more prepared," or "It's just not practical right now." Those words feel responsible. They make you sound like you're thinking things through. But the truth is, you're stalling. You're negotiating with your own greatness, hoping to buy more time from the fear of failure. The problem is, time isn't for sale. Every second you delay is a moment you'll never get back. And what's worse, you start believing that your excuses are actually truths. That belief becomes a mental prison that locks from the inside. When you tell yourself the same lie long enough, it stops feeling like a lie. "I can't" becomes your identity. "I'm not ready" becomes your belief system. "I'm too busy" becomes your way of avoiding the mirror. We wrap these lies around us like armor, but they don't protect us. They suffocate us. Excuses are emotional comfort food. They taste good for a moment, but leave you weak and unsatisfied. You feel safe because you didn't take the risk, but that safety is an illusion. Every excuse costs you something: your confidence, your credibility, your progress. Eventually, you realize that what you thought was safety was actually slow self-destruction. The truth is that everyone has a reason to fail. Everyone could list 100 explanations for why they're not further ahead. The difference between those who make it and those who don't isn't the size of their challenges, it's their honesty about them. High achievers don't lie to themselves. They don't sugarcoat their flaws, and they don't romanticize their struggles. They face the raw truth and act anyway. That honesty is the foundation of growth. You can't fix what you refuse to face. And until you stop telling yourself these comforting lies, every new opportunity will be filtered through the same old story. The story that says, "I can't." The abundance mindset begins where excuses end. It's not about pretending everything is perfect. It's about recognizing that every limitation is a challenge to outsmart, not a wall to surrender to. The lie that destroys most dreams is the belief that success requires special permission. More resources, more time, more connections. But abundance doesn't start with having more. It starts with using what you already have. Every person you admire began exactly where they were, not where they wished they could be. They started broke, scared, and uncertain, but they started. You can't outthink action. You can only outwork your fears by moving through them. The mind loves to rationalize because rationalization feels like progress. You analyze, plan, and research until it looks like you're working. But analysis can become paralysis when it replaces motion. That's the trick of the lie. It convinces you that overthinking is wisdom when it's really avoidance. The truth is, most people don't fail because they try and fall short. They fail because they never start. They build a fortress of logic around their fear and call it strategy. They study how to swim while standing on the shore, terrified of the water. The winners? They jump in, swallow some salt, and learn by doing. They understand that mistakes are tuition for mastery. Excuses, however, are debt you keep paying without ever learning anything new. The first step to outsmarting your excuses is to tell yourself the truth, completely, brutally, and without apology. You have to admit where you've been lying. Maybe you've been blaming lack of time, when in reality you're afraid of judgment. Maybe you've been telling yourself you're waiting for the perfect plan, when the truth is, you don't trust yourself to adapt. Maybe you've been saying, "I don't know how," when deep down, you haven't even tried to find out. When you tell yourself the truth, you take back control. Lies make you a victim. Truth makes you powerful. It might hurt to face it, but that pain is cleansing. It burns away the fog of denial that's been dulling your potential. The abundance mindset demands that you trade comfort for clarity. Comfort keeps you small. Clarity pushes you forward. You can't build an extraordinary life on excuses. You can only build it on decisions. Messy, imperfect, courageous decisions. The lie says you need to wait. The truth says you need to start. The lie says you need more time. The truth says you've already wasted enough. The lie says you're not ready. The truth says readiness is built through action, not before it. Every person who has ever created something great began while they still felt unsure. That's how growth works. You act your way into confidence, not the other way around. Excuses are easy because they're familiar. Truth is hard because it demands change. But once you choose truth, you'll find something remarkable. You start to trust yourself again. You start to believe in your own ability to follow through. You stop outsourcing your future to circumstances and you begin writing it in real time. Every excuse you abandon adds weight to your integrity. And when you live with integrity, you become unstoppable, not because life gets easier, but because your mind stops negotiating your limits. The world doesn't owe you clarity, permission, or perfection. It only responds to one thing: execution. When you stop lying to yourself, you stop waiting for the world to make it easy, and you start creating results that no excuse can compete with. Chapter 2. The Victim Trap. There is a quiet addiction spreading through the world, and most people don't even realize they're hooked. It's the addiction to being a victim. It doesn't always look desperate or dramatic. Sometimes it's subtle, disguised as self-pity, justified frustration, or righteous anger. It's the mindset that whispers, "Life is unfair, and there's nothing I can do about it." It's a soothing story because it shifts responsibility away from you and places it on something or someone else. The moment you adopt it, you feel lighter for a second, relieved of the burden of accountability. But that relief is poison. It eats away at your ambition and dignity. You stop being the author of your story and become a character waiting for someone else to fix it. The victim trap is seductive because it feels like truth. You can always find evidence to prove you've been wronged. Maybe your parents didn't support you. Maybe your boss overlooked you. Maybe the system feels stacked against you. Some of that may even be real. But here's the hard truth. Life doesn't reward fairness. It rewards ownership. The people who rise are not the ones with the easiest start. They're the ones who refuse to surrender their agency, no matter what cards they were dealt. Victims focus on the injustice. Leaders focus on the next move. One mindset builds excuses, the other builds results. The moment you decide that something outside of you has more power than what's inside you, you've already lost the game. When you live in victim mode, you trade power for pity. You crave validation instead of victory. You want others to acknowledge your pain instead of pushing you to transcend it. You start to confuse attention with progress. The problem is, attention doesn't heal you, it only feeds the wound. Every time you retell your story of being wronged, you reinforce the belief that you're powerless. You rehearse your limitations until they become your identity. Eventually, even opportunities that could free you will feel like threats because they demand accountability. You will resist them, not because you can't handle them, but because they don't fit the narrative that keeps you comfortable. There is no abundance in blame. There is no growth in resentment. These emotions keep you emotionally rich in drama, but bankrupt in results. The more you focus on who hurt you, who didn't help you, or who's holding you back, the less time you have to build something meaningful. Victimhood feels like safety, but it's a cage made of invisible bars. You think you're protecting yourself from pain, but you're actually protecting your excuses. You can't create freedom while worshiping your wounds. You can't build strength while nursing the belief that you're helpless. Power and pity cannot coexist in the same body. One has to die for the other to live. The hardest truth about life is that no one is coming to rescue you. The sooner you accept that, the freer you become. Waiting for someone to fix your circumstances is the most effective way to waste your life. You may get sympathy from others, but sympathy never built a future. It only sustains your dependency on external approval. You don't need saving. You need awakening. You need to remember that no matter how unfair the situation, your choices still matter. Your reaction still matters. Your effort still matters. There's always something you can do, but victimhood blinds you to it because it feeds on hopelessness. The moment you see yourself as powerless, you stop looking for solutions. The abundance mindset doesn't deny pain, it redirects it. It doesn't say nothing bad ever happens. It says nothing will define me except what I decide. That's the essence of self-leadership. You can acknowledge the hurt without letting it dictate your future. You can feel the anger without letting it turn into bitterness. You can learn from loss without letting it label you as broken. Every challenge becomes a test of perspective. The question isn't, why did this happen to me, but what will I do with it? That single shift transforms victims into victors. Life's greatest power move is not revenge or resistance, it's responsibility. When you claim ownership of your pain, it loses its control over you. People trapped in the victim mindset often think they're being realistic. They say things like, you don't understand my situation, or it's easy for others, not for me. They believe they're being honest, but what they're really doing is defending their limitations. Every excuse has a protective instinct behind it, the need to justify the fear of trying again. You convince yourself that circumstances are stronger than willpower, but history proves the opposite. Every innovator, every leader, every world changer has faced unfairness. They succeeded not because life gave them permission, but because they refused to surrender to the narrative of helplessness. They didn't need perfect conditions. They needed a powerful decision. The victim trap feeds on emotional comfort. It gives you someone to blame when life doesn't go your way. But that comfort costs you your confidence. Every time you indulge it, you erode your ability to trust yourself. You stop believing in your capacity to influence outcomes. That's why people who constantly blame others stay stuck even when opportunities arrive. They've trained their minds to outsource accountability. You cannot build abundance from dependency. To live abundantly, you must stop borrowing excuses from the past and start investing in action today. Your life begins to change the moment you stop asking, "Whose fault is this?" and start asking, "What can I do now?" The truth is, no one has an excuse that can outlast their potential. You've seen people rise from poverty, from trauma, from betrayal, from circumstances far worse than yours. The difference is never luck, it's mindset. It's the refusal to let pain turn into identity. Victims carry the weight of what happened to them. Leaders carry the lesson. Victims react, leaders respond. Victims wait for validation, 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 leaders respond. You can spend your life explaining why it's not your fault, or you can spend your life proving that you're unstoppable. You can't do both. The victim trap ends when you decide that life owes you nothing and that you owe yourself everything. It ends when you stop telling the story of what went wrong and start writing the story of what you're doing about it. Responsibility is not punishment, it's power. The moment you take full ownership of your situation, you reclaim your freedom to change it. You'll start to see opportunities that were invisible before because you were too focused on blame, and that's when the shift happens. You stop waiting for the world to be fair and start creating your own advantage. That's what abundance really means. It's not luck, it's leverage. You turn what was meant to break you into fuel. You outsmart the excuses that wants to find you, and in doing so, you prove the simplest, strongest truth of all. No one can hold you back if you refuse to stay small. Chapter 3. Fear in Disguise. Fear is the quiet architect behind every excuse. It never shows itself directly because it knows you'd confront it if you saw it clearly. Instead, it hides behind logic, timing, responsibility, or even humility. It whispers that you're not ready, that you're being practical, that you should wait for a better moment. It convinces you that hesitation is wisdom and avoidance is strategy. That is how fear operates. It doesn't shout, it negotiates. It reasons with you until you mistake paralysis for patience. Most people spend their entire lives making decisions that look rational but are rooted in fear. They talk about stability, security, and preparation, but what they really mean is comfort. Fear doesn't always make you run away. Sometimes it convinces you to stay where you are. Every excuse you've ever made was built to protect you from fear. The fear of failure, rejection, judgment, loss, or even success. Failure frightens you because it exposes your limits. Success frightens you because it demands change. Rejection stings because it threatens your identity. And loss? Loss terrifies you because it reminds you that nothing is guaranteed. So you build these clever emotional shields, telling yourself stories that sound reasonable but are really about protection. You'll tell yourself you're not ready to start the business, not qualified for the promotion, not talented enough to create, or not lucky enough to succeed. Those aren't facts. They're defense mechanisms. Fear is not your enemy. Denial is. When you refuse to call fear by its name, you give it authority over your choices. The problem with fear is not that it exists, it's that we mistake it for truth. When fear speaks, it doesn't say, "I'm scared." It says, "This isn't the right time," or, "I'm being realistic." But fear's realism is poison. It shrinks your vision until it fits inside your comfort zone. The abundance mindset doesn't remove fear, it reframes it. It teaches you to see fear as data, not destiny. Every time you feel afraid, your mind is revealing what matters most to you. Fear highlights the gap between where you are and where you're meant to go. Instead of letting it paralyze you, you can use it as a compass. When you follow the path of least fear, you walk straight into mediocrity. When you move toward what scares you, you enter the territory where growth lives. The people you admire are not fearless. They've simply learned to stop worshiping fear. They act while afraid. They walk into uncertainty knowing it's part of the price of evolution. That's why they grow while others wait. The difference between those who make history and those who watch it unfold is not the absence of fear, but the mastery of it. When you train yourself to act through fear, you reclaim control. The emotion loses its grip because action proves that it's survivable. Courage is not a feeling, it's a choice. The more you choose it, the less fear controls your life. Every time you do something you're afraid of, your confidence compounds. You start to realize that fear was never a wall, it was a mirror reflecting your next level. Most people spend their energy avoiding the possibility of discomfort. They call it being cautious, but what they're really doing is building a smaller life. Fear loves when you play small because small feels safe. You tell yourself you're protecting what you have, but you're actually protecting what you're afraid to lose. You become a curator of comfort, arranging your life to minimize risk instead of maximize potential. But there's a cost to that kind of safety. It dulls your hunger, weakens your instincts, and slowly erodes your belief that you can handle uncertainty. When fear runs your choices, you become predictable, and predictable people don't grow. Growth requires friction. You can't evolve inside the same conditions that created your limitations. The truth about fear is that it never disappears. It just changes shape. You conquer one fear and another takes its place. The goal isn't to eliminate fear, it's to outgrow it. You outgrow fear by confronting it repeatedly until it loses its voice. You stop negotiating with it and start acting faster than it can talk you out of it. That's how you build momentum. The longer you think about doing something, the louder fear becomes. It multiplies in hesitation. You can't think your way out of fear. You can only move through it. Every act of courage rewires your brain to associate fear with forward motion, not paralysis. That's why bold people keep winning. They've trained themselves to take action before their excuses catch up. You'll often hear people say they're waiting for confidence before they act. but confidence is a result, not a prerequisite. Waiting for confidence is just fear in disguise. You build confidence by keeping promises to yourself, by proving through experience that you can handle more than you thought. The first time you step into fear, it feels unbearable. The second time, manageable. The third time, normal. Eventually, the same things that used to terrify you become effortless. Fear doesn't fade because you become fearless, it fades because you become focused. You stop caring about the outcome and start caring about the process. Fear loses its influence when the mission becomes bigger than your emotions. The abundance mindset is the opposite of fear-based thinking. Fear focuses on scarcity. It asks, what if I fail? What if I lose? Abundance asks, what if I grow? What if I win? What if I become stronger because of this? The shift seems small, but it changes everything. When you think abundantly, failure becomes feedback, and rejection becomes redirection. Every experience, even painful ones, becomes useful. Fear shrinks your world. Abundance expands it. You stop seeing challenges as threats and start seeing them as teachers. That's how fear transforms from an obstacle into a guide. It stops being something to escape and becomes something to engage with. The only way to outsmart fear is through brutal honesty. You have to catch it in the act, recognize the disguise, and call it by name. When you hear yourself say, "I don't have time," ask, "Am I afraid of wasting effort?" When you say, "I'm not ready," ask, "Am I afraid of being judged?" When you say, "I don't know how," ask, "Am I afraid to look foolish while learning?" Most of the time, the answer is yes. Once you admit that, fear loses half its power. You start to see the pattern, and once you see the pattern, you can break it. Awareness destroys manipulation. You can't be controlled by what you've exposed. Fear thrives in silence. It grows stronger the longer you hide it. Speak it out loud and you'll realize how small it actually is. Write it down and it becomes something you can study, plan for, and outmaneuver. The goal isn't to eliminate fear, but to make it irrelevant. When you move through it enough times, it stops being an obstacle and starts being a signal that you're on the right path. The presence of fear means you're evolving. It means you're alive, pushing boundaries, expanding your capacity. The absence of fear means you're stagnant, trapped in a comfort zone that's slowly becoming a coffin. The moment you stop fearing fear itself, you become unstoppable. You stop waiting for courage and start acting like it's already yours. Fear may visit, but it no longer stays. It becomes background noise in a life driven by purpose. The only thing worse than failing is never finding out who you could have become because fear convinced you not to try. You don't conquer fear by fighting it. You conquer it by refusing to let it make your decision. Every time you choose courage over comfort, you reclaim a piece of your freedom. That's the secret abundance never hides from you. Fear doesn't disappear when you win. It disappears when you stop letting it decide how you live. Chapter 4. Comfort is the enemy. Comfort is the most seductive form of failure. It lures you with ease, security, and predictability. It tells you that you've earned a break, that you deserve to relax, that you can coast for a while. It feels good because it removes friction, and for a moment everything seems peaceful. But that peace is deceptive. It's not growth. It's stagnation dressed as satisfaction. Comfort convinces you that staying the same is safer than stretching for more, but it's the slowest, most silent way to destroy your potential. It doesn't hit you like a tragedy, it seeps in like a toxin. One day you wake up and realize that years have passed, your dreams have faded, and you can't remember the last time you did something that scared you. Comfort doesn't kill quickly. It erodes your hunger until you stop reaching altogether. People don't lose in life because they lack ability, they lose because they stop being hungry. The moment you stop chasing growth, you start decaying. Comfort tells you to avoid discomfort, but everything you want lives on the other side of it. Every new skill, opportunity, or transformation requires friction. Discomfort is the tuition you pay for evolution. When you seek ease, you sacrifice expansion. The mind loves comfort because it equates predictability with safety. But your spirit suffocates there. Deep down, you know when you've settled. You can feel the quiet dissatisfaction creeping in even while you tell yourself you're content. That unease isn't failure. It's your potential trying to wake you up. The longer you ignore it, the more restless your soul becomes. Comfort seduces you with short-term pleasure while stealing long-term fulfillment. It teaches you to value the immediate over the important. You scroll instead of build. You plan instead of act. You say tomorrow instead of today. Comfort gives you the illusion of control because everything feels manageable, but it also removes the thrill of becoming. Growth is messy, uncertain, and often painful. That's why so many people trade their dreams for convenience. They'd rather feel stable than stretched, validated than victorious. But stability without progress is just a prettier version of stuck. You might not feel the pain now, but the price will come later, in regret, in mediocrity, in the haunting thought that you could have been so much more. The world glorifies comfort because it's profitable. Entire industries are built around making your life easier, faster, and softer. But ease doesn't make you strong, it makes you dependent. The more comfortable your environment, the weaker your mindset becomes. You start expecting everything to be smooth, and when it's not, you crumble. That's why people panic when adversity hits. They've never built resilience in the small things. They've been insulated from challenge so long that even a minor setback feels like catastrophe. True abundance doesn't come from eliminating struggle, it comes from mastering it. The more you lean into discomfort, the more capable you become, and capability, not comfort, is the real security in life. You can't build confidence in a comfort zone. Confidence is forged in fire, not luxury. It's built through repetition, discipline, and endurance. Every time you do something difficult, you prove to yourself that you can. That proof compounds. Eventually, the things that once terrified you become normal. The things that once felt impossible become routine. But you only earn that evolution by stepping into tension. The muscle doesn't grow unless it's torn. The same is true for your character. Without challenge, your potential remains dormant, like a seed refusing to break its shell. Growth requires discomfort. You can't skip the stretch and still expect to expand. The comfort trap often disguises itself as balance. People tell themselves they're maintaining harmony when in truth they're avoiding effort. Balance is important, but most people use it as an excuse for stagnation. They say they don't want to burn out, but what they really mean is they don't want to be uncomfortable. Burnout doesn't come from doing too much. It comes from doing too little of what matters. When your life lacks purpose, even small tasks drain you. When you're on fire with vision, you can handle more than you thought possible. Comfort kills that fire. It replaces passion with passivity. You begin to measure your life by convenience instead of contribution. And nothing great is ever born from convenience. You cannot claim to want greatness while worshiping comfort. The two cannot coexist. Greatness demands risk, sacrifice, and relentless self-honesty. It demands that you trade easy rewards for meaningful work. Comfort offers instant gratification. Growth offers lasting fulfillment. One fades quickly, the other compounds forever. Every person must decide what they're willing to endure in exchange for evolution. If you only move when it's easy, you'll always remain average. The most successful people in the world didn't get there by avoiding struggle. They mastered it. They built a relationship with discomfort. They learned to love the feeling of uncertainty because it meant they were alive, growing, and pushing beyond their previous limits. The truth is, comfort feels like relief when you're tired, but it becomes regret when you stay too long. It dulls your edge, weakens your instincts, and makes you allergic to challenge. You start avoiding anything that stretches you because it feels foreign. The very things that could liberate you begin to feel like threats. That's how potential dies. Not in a moment of failure, But in a lifetime of small, comfortable choices, every time you avoid the hard conversation, skip the workout, delay the dream, or numb the discomfort, you reinforce a habit of shrinking. You teach yourself to retreat from life. The irony is that comfort, meant to protect you from pain, eventually becomes the source of it. Discomfort is not your enemy. It's the signal that you're alive and progressing. It's the gap between who you are and who you're becoming. The pain you feel while growing is far more valuable than the pleasure of staying still. It's the price of transformation. The sooner you embrace it, the faster you evolve. Comfort keeps you in the illusion of control. Discomfort gives you real control by expanding your capacity to handle chaos. Every breakthrough you've ever had was born in a moment of discomfort. Every person who ever inspired you faced fear, doubt, and difficulty and did it anyway. That's what separates the fulfilled from the frustrated. The fulfilled learn to befriend discomfort until it no longer feels like pain. It feels like progress. The day you stop chasing comfort is the day you start chasing purpose. Life won't get easier, but it will get richer. You'll stop craving predictability and start craving growth. You'll stop looking for peace in avoidance and start finding it in mastery. The world won't change, but your relationship to challenge will. You'll stop waiting for the path to be smooth and start trusting your ability to handle it when it's not. That's when you become truly powerful, when your peace doesn't depend on ease, but on inner strength. Comfort is the enemy not because it feels good, but because it costs too much. It costs your drive, your dreams, your potential. You were not built to live inside your limits. You were built to test them, expand them, and rise above them. The more you embrace discomfort, the more alive you become. That is where abundance begins, not in ease, but in evolution. Chapter 5: The Language of Limitation. The words you speak shape the world you live in. Every sentence you repeat becomes a thread in the fabric of your reality. Most people don't realize that their vocabulary is a mirror of their mindset. The language of limitation is subtle, familiar, and everywhere. It's in the way people talk about their goals, their abilities, their time, and their worth. They say things like, "I can't," "I don't have enough," "I'll try," "It's hard," or "That's just how it is." These words sound harmless, but they carry weight. They reinforce the belief that life happens to you instead of through you. Every time you speak limitation, you affirm weakness. You instruct your subconscious to find proof that you're right, and it will. The mind doesn't question your words, it obeys them. If you keep telling yourself that something is impossible, your brain will stop looking for solutions and start building walls to protect that belief. Language is more than communication, it's creation. The abundance mindset begins with how you speak to yourself. The phrases you use either empower or imprison you. People who live in scarcity don't even realize how much they sabotage themselves through speech. They use language that keeps them small, passive, and reactive. When something goes wrong, they say, "That's just my luck." When they face challenge, they sigh, "Story of my life." These statements sound casual, but they reinforce victimhood. The more you repeat them, the more natural they feel until limitation becomes your mother tongue. Your life shrinks to fit the dimensions of your vocabulary. The fewer possibilities you speak, the fewer you see. The more you talk about obstacles, the bigger they become. The language of limitation thrives on excuses. It justifies procrastination and normalizes mediocrity. You hear it in conversations everywhere. "It's not the right time," "I don't have the resources," "I'll start when things calm down." These aren't statements of fact, they're declarations of fear. When you speak like this, you're unconsciously programming yourself to delay your own success. Your words create inertia. They condition your mind to wait for permission instead of creating opportunity. You can't speak limitation and live abundance. The two languages cannot coexist. One builds barriers, the other builds bridges. You must choose which world you want to live in, because you can't build a limitless life with the vocabulary of the defeated. Pay attention to how often people use negative framing when they talk about themselves. I'm bad with money. I'm not disciplined. I'm terrible at remembering names. I hate mornings. These phrases seem like self-awareness, but they're actually self-programming. Every time you speak them, you cement an identity. You tell your brain who you are, and your brain works tirelessly to keep you consistent with that identity. That's why changing your life begins with changing your language. Start saying, "I'm learning to manage money. I'm building stronger discipline. I'm improving my memory. I'm becoming a morning person." These simple shifts seem small, but they rewire your perspective. You move from judgment to growth, from fixed to fluid, from limitation to possibility. Words become commands, and your mind listens. The abundance mindset doesn't just eliminate negative language, it replaces it with intentional language. Instead of saying, "I can't," say, "I haven't yet." Instead of, "I don't have time," say, "It's not my priority right now." Instead of, "I failed," say, "I learned." These changes might feel unnatural at first because limitation has been your native tongue for years. But over time, empowerment becomes fluent. You'll notice your energy shift. You'll start catching yourself before you speak defeat. You'll feel the difference between language that drains you and language that drives you. This is how transformation begins. Not with massive leaps, but with conscious words. You can't talk yourself into greatness overnight, but you can stop talking yourself out of it right now. Listen carefully to the words of people who achieve at a high level. They don't use phrases like "if it works out" or "hopefully." They speak with clarity and conviction. They say, "I will," "I am," "I choose," "I commit." Their language doesn't describe their circumstances, it defines their standards. They use words that align with ownership. When they fail, they don't say, "It wasn't meant to be." They say, "I didn't execute well enough." Yet, they understand that the moment you shift from explaining life to designing it, your entire reality expands. The language of leadership is decisive. It commands action instead of describing hesitation. That's what makes it powerful. The way you speak about challenges determines how you experience them. When you label something hard, your brain prepares for struggle. When you call it a learning curve, your brain prepares for growth. The words you attach to events determine their emotional meaning. If you say, "I'm overwhelmed," your body tightens, your mind narrows, and your focus scatters. If you say, "I'm managing a lot right now, but I'm handling it," your physiology changes. You breathe deeper, you stand taller, you regain control. That's how powerful language is. It shapes your biology. The body follows the tone of your thoughts. Your words are signals to your nervous system, telling it whether to panic or perform. The scarcity language will always sound familiar because it's been normalized by society. We are trained from childhood to speak limitation. We hear it in classrooms, workplaces, media, and even in casual conversations. Phrases like, "That's unrealistic," "Be careful, don't get your hopes up," or "That's just life," are considered wisdom, but they are actually caution disguised as common sense. When you adopt those phrases, you adopt the mindset that created them. To live abundantly, you must learn a new dialect, the dialect of possibility. It's a language that refuses to bow to fear or conformity. It challenges the rules that small thinkers built to protect themselves from risk. Abundant language is not delusion, it's direction. It's choosing to focus on what you can influence instead of what you can't. The language of limitation is lazy. It takes no effort to say, "I can't." It requires vision to say, "How can I?" The former ends a conversation, the latter begins one. Every breakthrough in human history started with someone asking, "How?" instead of declaring, "Can't." That single shift from limitation to curiosity has built empires, cured diseases, and expanded possibility. You can't be both a complainer and a creator. One drains energy, the other channels it. Every word you speak is a vote for the kind of person you're becoming. Each complaint, excuse, or doubt is a withdrawal from your potential. Each statement of intent, belief, or action is a deposit into your future. The account of your destiny is filled or emptied through the words you choose every day. If you want to outsmart your excuses, start with your language. Catch the moments when you speak defeat. Replace them with words of agency. Stop narrating your limitations as though they're facts written in stone. They're not. They're stories you've been repeating, and stories can be rewritten. Every sentence you change shifts your identity slightly closer to the person you're meant to become. Language is the architecture of destiny. Speak limitation and you'll live within boundaries. Speak abundance and you'll live in expansion. The difference between the two is not talent or opportunity, it's vocabulary. Change your words and you'll begin to change your world. Chapter 6. Choice over chance. Life will give you countless opportunities to surrender your power. It will offer you excuses disguised as bad luck, circumstances that look unfair, and outcomes that seem beyond your control. Most people take the bait. They surrender their authority over their own story and start to believe that life is something that happens to them, not something they create. They talk about fate, timing, destiny, or luck as if those forces have more control over their future than the choices they make each day. But life doesn't bend to luck. It bends to decisions. Every outcome, every direction, every transformation begins with a choice. The idea that success or failure depends on chance is one of the greatest lies ever told. The truth is, chance might open the door, but choice determines whether you walk through it. The difference between ordinary and extraordinary isn't luck, it's decision-making. Every choice you make compounds into a direction, and that direction defines your destiny. You are where you are because of the choices you made, not the chances you missed. It's easy to point to external factors, the economy, timing, upbringing, opportunity, but that's the language of avoidance. When you blame chance, you avoid responsibility. You let yourself off the hook for the outcomes you don't like. It's comfortable to believe that you didn't have a choice, but it's never true. You always have a choice, even if it's small, even if it's painful, even if it's imperfect. The abundance mindset is built on that truth. It says, I am never powerless, because I always have a decision to make. People who live by chance wait. They wait for the perfect conditions, the right connection, the ideal timing. They convince themselves that their breakthrough is somewhere out there, controlled by invisible forces. They pray for miracles while ignoring the choices that could create them. People who live by choice, on the other hand, don't wait. They act. They make the best possible decision with what they have, and they make it again tomorrow, and the next day, and the next. They understand that progress isn't made in leaps, but in consistent, deliberate steps. They don't romanticize luck. They respect it, but they never depend on it, because the moment you depend on chance, you've surrendered your freedom to something you can't control. Every excuse you make is a refusal to choose. You say you can't because of your past, your environment, or your situation, but what you're really saying is, I choose not to act. You're choosing to believe that your circumstances are stronger than your will, but they aren't, they never were. The mind loves to shift responsibility to chance because it relieves the burden of effort. It's easier to say, I didn't get lucky than to say, I didn't commit, but comfort never built greatness, and luck never sustained it. The people who build extraordinary lives are those who choose action in the face of uncertainty. They choose courage over convenience, growth over fear, and ownership over blame. They don't ask for guarantees. They create momentum. Choice is the foundation of power. Every time you make one consciously, you strengthen your identity as the kind of person who takes control. When you stop choosing, life chooses for you. That's what happens to people who float through existence. They let their jobs, relationships, and routines make decisions on their behalf. They end up living lives designed by indecision. But when you choose deliberately, even in small ways, you reclaim authority over your direction. You can't always choose what happens, but you can always choose how to respond, what to learn, and where to go next. That's where real freedom lives, not in perfection, but in participation. The act of choosing keeps you alive and engaged with your purpose. Luck is unreliable. It doesn't care who deserves what. Sometimes it blesses those who do nothing. Other times it challenges those who've worked for years. You can't control its rhythm. But choice? That's predictable, dependable, and always available. You can't guarantee what life will give you, but you can guarantee how you meet it. Every time you choose to show up when others quit, to persist when others retreat, to learn when others complain, you tilt the odds in your favor. Eventually, what people call luck starts showing up. But it's not luck anymore. It's the byproduct of consistent, intelligent decision-making. The universe rewards participation, not passivity. There's a dangerous mindset that says some people are just lucky, born in the right family, in the right place, at the right time. It's true that not everyone starts from the same position, but everyone starts with the same weapon, choice. The power to decide what to do next is universal. Some start with less, but those who keep choosing to move forward eventually surpass those who had more but stopped choosing. The starting line matters less than the number of times you get up and decide to keep going. When you choose relentlessly, you create momentum that chance can't replicate. You stop waiting for alignment and start creating opportunity. The victim mentality believes that chance determines destiny. The abundance mindset knows that choice creates it. The difference is ownership. People who live by chance focus on what they can't control. They waste energy worrying about timing, outcomes, and opinions. People who live by choice focus on what they can control. Their attitude, their effort, their preparation. They act without waiting for certainty, and certainty arrives through action. That's how winners think. They don't rely on miracles because they are too busy making moves. Their consistency creates coincidences that others call luck. But those coincidences were crafted by countless unseen choices made in faith long before results appeared. Your excuses will always try to disguise themselves as lack of opportunity. You'll tell yourself you didn't have the same luck, the same connections, the same resources, but those are all stories of chance, not of choice. The truth is, your next step has always been in your control. You may not control the conditions, but you control the decision. You can choose to learn, to act, to start over, to adapt. You can choose to outgrow your environment. You can choose discipline over distraction, persistence over comfort, creation over complaint. Every choice either reinforces your excuses or dismantles them. You're not a product of luck. You're a product of the decisions you repeat every day. The world belongs to those who decide. You can hope, wish, and wait, or you can choose, commit, and create. Waiting feels safe because it transfers responsibility to the universe, but waiting is expensive. It costs you momentum, confidence, and time. Action is riskier, but it pays with growth. Every meaningful result in life is the reward of someone who refused to wait for chance to bless them. The more you choose, the luckier you get. That's not superstition. That's cause and effect. The universe rewards those who act on intention. It moves in the direction of motion. The next time you catch yourself saying, "I hope it works out," stop. Replace it with, "I'll make it work." The first statement depends on chance. The second depends on choice. Hope without action is surrender. Choice with action is power. Every day, you have the opportunity to decide what kind of person you want to be. One who reacts to life, or one who designs it. One who waits for something to happen, or one who makes something happen. Your potential doesn't depend on luck, timing, or permission. It depends on your willingness to choose again and again, until your decisions outweigh your excuses. There are people who will spend their whole lives waiting for the right moment that never comes. And there are those who will look back and realize the right moment was every moment they were alive and able to choose. You don't need a guarantee. You need a decision. You don't need luck. You need consistency. Life doesn't reward hesitation. It rewards participation. You're one decision away from momentum, one choice away from power, one act away from changing everything. You can live by chance and drift through your days, or you can live by choice and direct your destiny. But you can't do both. The moment you decide that choice is your weapon, excuses lose their power. Because when you choose with purpose, luck becomes irrelevant, and your life becomes yours again. Chapter 7. The Mirror Principle. Everything you experience in life is a reflection of you. Your results, your relationships, your routines, and even your setbacks mirror what you believe, how you think, and what you tolerate. The mirror principle is simple yet ruthless. Your outer world is a direct projection of your inner world. If you're undisciplined inside, chaos will show up outside. If you're filled with doubt, opportunities will seem distant. If you live in resentment, life will echo conflict back to you. The world doesn't give you what you want, it gives you what you are. This truth offends the ego because it leaves no one else to blame. It forces you to stop pointing outward and start looking inward. It's much easier to accuse life of being unfair than to admit that your reflection is showing you something you refuse to fix. But growth doesn't happen in comfort. It begins when you stop arguing with your reflection and start transforming the person staring back at you. The mirror principle doesn't lie, it reveals. It shows you what you've been ignoring. Every repeated struggle, every recurring disappointment, every familiar frustration is feedback. If you keep attracting the same kinds of people, situations, or outcomes, that's your reflection trying to teach you something. Life repeats lessons until you learn them. The same patterns will return in new disguises until you evolve beyond them. People who don't understand this principle live in loops, blaming luck, others, or timing, never realizing that the real common denominator is them. You can't escape a lesson you refuse to face. Every mirror moment is a chance for breakthrough, but only if you stop avoiding what it shows. We are all mirrors to ourselves. When someone irritates you, it's often because they reflect something unresolved within you. The qualities you judge in others usually exist in some form in your own behavior or mindset. When you feel envy, you're not mad at them, you're frustrated with your own unfulfilled potential. When you feel judgment, you're often highlighting traits you've disowned or denied. The mirror doesn't exist to shame you, it exists to reveal the next area for growth. The moment you realize this, life becomes less about blame and more about observation. You start asking, "What is this situation trying to show me about myself?" instead of, "Why is this happening to me?" That single shift moves you from victimhood to ownership. The truth is that nothing changes until you do. You can switch jobs, cities, partners, or friends, but if your mindset remains the same, your results will follow you. External changes without internal transformation only recreate old problems in new locations. You can't escape your reflection, you can only upgrade it. People spend their lives rearranging their environment when they should be rearranging their mindset. The abundance mindset understands this perfectly. It doesn't chase new scenery. It cultivates new perception. Once your perception changes, the reflection naturally shifts. Your reality adjusts to match the person you've become. That's why some people seem to attract success effortlessly. They've aligned their internal frequency with what they want externally. The mirror simply reflects that alignment. Self-honesty is the foundation of the mirror principle. You can't improve what you won't acknowledge. Most people avoid self-reflection because it exposes the gap between who they are and who they claim to be. They hide behind excuses, blame, and distraction to avoid seeing the truth. But the truth, as harsh as it can be, is your greatest ally. When you face it fully, you reclaim power. You stop wasting energy maintaining illusions and start investing it in transformation. The mirror doesn't judge you, it simply reflects you. What you see isn't condemnation, it's data. It's the evidence you need to grow. The sooner you embrace that feedback, the faster you evolve. Accountability is the act of facing the mirror with courage. It's looking at your results and saying, I created this, not they made me, not life forced me, but this is mine. That ownership is not blame, it's liberation. It means you have the power to create something different. Excuses vanish in the light of accountability because they can't survive truth. The person who accepts full responsibility stops waiting for life to change and starts changing life. They understand that the reflection follows the decision, not the other way around. When you take ownership of your reflection, the mirror stops being a critic and becomes a teacher. Every flaw it shows is an invitation to improve. The mirror principle also applies to success. When you achieve something great, that too is a reflection of your mindset. Your discipline, focus, and belief are mirrored in your results. If you lose them, the reflection fades. That's why maintaining success requires continual growth. You can't stay the same and expect the mirror to keep showing progress. The reflection always adjusts to your current state. The moment you become complacent, life mirrors stagnation back at you. This is why humility is so important. It keeps you open to learning. It reminds you that the mirror can change at any time, and the only way to keep seeing abundance is to keep becoming the kind of person who deserves it. When you understand that life mirrors your energy, your language, and your effort, excuses lose their power. You stop saying they never support me and start asking what am I doing that invites that pattern. You stop saying nothing ever works out for me and start asking what belief am I carrying that repels opportunity. The mirror isn't punishing you, it's guiding you. It's showing you what to release, what to refine, and what to reinforce. Every result is feedback. Every obstacle is a lesson in disguise. Every disappointment is a sign that your reflection needs adjustment. Once you start seeing life this way, frustration turns into fascination. You stop taking things personally and start taking them purposefully. There's no greater freedom than realizing that you are both the cause and the solution. You stop chasing luck, approval, and validation because you understand that the reflection changes when you do. You no longer need to manipulate the world. You master yourself. That mastery radiates outward, changing your environment, relationships, and outcomes. This is the quiet power of alignment. When you change internally, your external world can't help but respond. It's not magic. It's law. The mirror principle is always at work, whether you acknowledge it or not. The question is whether you'll use it consciously or let it use you. Look around your life right now. The quality of your health, the depth of your relationships, the stability of your finances, the clarity of your purpose. They're all mirrors. They're all telling you a story about your choices, your mindset, and your priorities. If you don't like what you see, that's good. It means you've been given clarity. The solution isn't to break the mirror. It's to rebuild the reflection. Start by upgrading your thoughts, strengthening your habits, and speaking words of power instead of doubt. Over time, your world will shift because you've shifted. Life always mirrors the one who looks into it with courage. The reflection isn't your enemy, it's your greatest ally. Once you learn to study it without denial or fear, you become unstoppable. Because when you master your reflection, you master your reality. And when you master your reality, excuses cease to exist. Chapter 8. Accountability. The ultimate power move. Accountability is the dividing line between those who grow and those who stagnate. It is not a trait that some people are born with. It is a decision that only a few are willing to make. Most people will spend their lives running from accountability because it exposes truth. It removes the safety net of excuses and forces you to stand in front of your results with nothing to hide behind. It is easier to blame, to rationalize, to explain why things didn't go as planned than to admit that you simply didn't do what you said you would. But accountability, while uncomfortable, is the foundation of freedom. The moment you claim full responsibility for your life is the moment you stop being powerless. Everything changes the instant you say, I created this, and I can change it. Accountability demands self-honesty. You cannot be accountable and delusional at the same time. You cannot hold yourself to a standard while lying about how often you meet it. The truth is that every area of your life is already giving you feedback. Your body reflects your habits. Your bank account reflects your discipline. Your relationships reflect your character. Your results are evidence. Accountability is the courage to study that evidence without denial. It's not about guilt or shame. It's about clarity. When you know exactly where you stand, you can do something about it. When you deny, you stay stuck. Growth begins with awareness, and awareness begins with responsibility. People often think accountability is a burden, but it is actually a source of empowerment. It means you are in control. When you refuse to take responsibility, you hand over your power to circumstances, to people, or to luck. You become reactive instead of creative. Accountability flips that script. It says, no matter what happens, I decide how this story ends. That mindset transforms every obstacle into an opportunity to grow. When something fails, you don't ask, who is to blame? You ask, what can I learn? What will I do differently next time? That shift turns setbacks into strategy. It's the difference between being at the mercy of life and mastering it. Accountability is not about perfection, it's about ownership. You will make mistakes, you will fail. But when you're accountable, failure becomes feedback instead of finality. In a culture obsessed with comfort, accountability feels harsh. People prefer sympathy to self-examination. They want understanding instead of truth. But sympathy doesn't fix patterns, it feeds them. Accountability breaks them. It forces you to confront your habits and excuses head on. It strips away illusions and demands growth. It's not easy work, but it's the only work that matters. The most successful people in the world are not the most talented or the luckiest. They are the most accountable. They take full ownership of their progress, their performance, and their mindset. When they fall short, they don't explain it away, they correct it. When they win, they don't gloat, they analyze and improve. Accountability turns life into a practice instead of a performance. Every day becomes a chance to refine yourself rather than defend yourself. Excuses and accountability cannot coexist. One kills the other. The moment you start making excuses, accountability disappears. The moment you claim accountability, excuses evaporate. You cannot say, I want success, and then blame your circumstances when it doesn't come. You either own your path or you abandon it. The mind will always try to protect the ego by externalizing blame. It feels safer to say, it's not my fault, than to admit, I didn't follow through. But safety is not strength. Accountability requires you to risk your pride to gain progress. It requires you to admit that your potential is bigger than your effort has been. That realization hurts at first, but it's liberating because it puts the power back in your hands. You no longer have to wait for conditions to change. You can change yourself. True accountability is quiet. It's not about public declarations or self-promotion. It's about the private discipline to keep your word when no one is watching. It's about doing the work you promised yourself you'd do even when motivation disappears. Accountability isn't glamorous. It's the decision to show up again and again when it's boring, inconvenient, or hard. That consistency builds self-respect, and self-respect builds confidence. When you keep your own promises, you stop needing external validation. You become internally driven instead of externally dependent. You don't chase approval because your integrity becomes your identity. Accountability, then, is not just a behavior. It's a lifestyle of alignment between your words and your actions. Holding yourself accountable also means surrounding yourself with people who won't let you settle. Weak environments breed weak results. If everyone around you accepts excuses, you will too. Accountability thrives in environments where standards are non-negotiable. Find people who tell you the truth, even when it's uncomfortable. People who challenge you to rise, not coddle you into complacency. Accountability partners are not babysitters. Their mirror reflect your best and worst back to you. The abundance mindset welcomes that reflection because it values growth over ego. Small thinkers avoid accountability because they fear judgment. Big thinkers seek it because they crave evolution. The stronger your circle, the higher your standard becomes. The absence of accountability leads to chaos. When people refuse responsibility, systems collapse, relationships decay, and organizations fail. Accountability holds everything together because it aligns intention with execution. It creates order out of effort. You can't build anything sustainable without it. Discipline without accountability fades into inconsistency. Accountability is the bridge between desire and result. It's the constant that keeps you grounded when emotions fluctuate. The most reliable path to abundance is not motivation, it's accountability. Motivation gets you started, but accountability keeps you going when motivation runs dry. The moment you stop holding yourself accountable, your excuses multiply. They grow more sophisticated. You start convincing yourself that slowing down is self-care when it's really avoidance. You tell yourself you're being patient when you're really procrastinating. You say you're planning when you're actually hiding. Accountability cuts through all that noise. It demands transparency. It asks, what did you commit to and did you deliver? There is no middle ground. You either did or you didn't. That level of clarity can be uncomfortable, but it's also incredibly freeing. There's no confusion, no gray area, no emotional drama, just truth and adjustment. That's the rhythm of growth. Act, measure, refine, repeat. The reward for accountability is self-mastery. Once you take complete ownership of your life, nothing can control you. Circumstances lose their grip because you've stopped outsourcing your outcomes. You stop blaming others, which means you stop waiting for others. You become self-directed, self-correcting, and self-sustaining. Life stops feeling random and starts feeling intentional. Even when chaos comes, you handle it differently because you see yourself as the author, not the victim. That identity shift changes everything. You become solution-oriented, resilient, and unstoppable. There is no abundance without accountability. Abundance is not luck or privilege. It's the result of daily ownership. It's the reward for choosing responsibility over excuses, consistency over comfort, and growth over guilt. Accountability is the ultimate power move because it hands your life back to you. Once you accept that every choice, habit, and outcome is connected to you, you become impossible to manipulate or defeat. You stop negotiating with mediocrity. You stop waiting for permission. You start moving with clarity and purpose. From that place, success becomes predictable because it's built on integrity. Accountability transforms you from someone who hopes things get better into someone who makes them better. And that is where all excuses finally die, under the weight of undeniable ownership. Chapter 9, Discipline Over Drama. The difference between the people who get what they want and the people who only talk about it always comes down to one thing, discipline. It's not talent, timing, or luck, it's consistency. Drama is emotional, it's reactive, chaotic, and loud. Discipline is quiet, steady, and strategic. Drama thrives on impulse, discipline thrives on intention. The problem is that most people are addicted to the former. They prefer the emotional rush of starting over, the steady grind of following through. They chase excitement instead of results, feelings instead of focus. They confuse being busy with being productive and wonder why they stay stuck. But growth doesn't happen in bursts of inspiration, it happens in long stretches of discipline. If you keep choosing drama over discipline, your life will always feel intense but never move forward. Discipline is the art of doing what you said you would do long after the mood you set it in has disappeared. That single principle separates the achievers from the talkers. Most people start strong and fade fast because they rely on motivation. They wait to feel ready, inspired, or confident. But discipline doesn't care how you feel. It just requires that you act. Every time you show up without emotion leading the way, you train your brain to obey commitment over convenience. That's how you build mental strength. Discipline is the muscle that grows when comfort is denied. And like any muscle, it only grows when tested. The more you push through resistance, the more capable you become. Drama is seductive because it gives you attention without accountability. It lets you stay in motion without progress. You can talk about your problems, complain about your challenges, and live in the loop of emotional intensity without ever producing results. Drama feels alive. Discipline looks boring, but boredom is where mastery is born. The greats don't chase stimulation, they chase execution. They understand that consistency compounds. What you do every day, no matter how small, builds momentum that emotion can't replicate. Drama gives you the illusion of movement, but discipline gives you measurable results. You have to decide whether you want to feel good in the moment or proud in the long run. The reason most people stay stuck in cycles of frustration is because they keep mistaking motion for progress. They start new projects, make big declarations, and get swept up in the drama of the moment, but they rarely finish. Finishing requires discipline, the ability to stick with the mundane, the repetitive, and the unglamorous. Discipline demands that you show up even when nobody's watching, even when the results are invisible. That kind of commitment builds character, and character builds destiny. Drama feeds the ego. Discipline feeds the purpose. When you live for drama, you burn out. When you live for discipline, you build something that lasts. Your excuses will always try to disguise themselves as emotion. They'll tell you that you're tired, that you deserve a break, that it's not fair, that no one appreciates you. Drama thrives on these stories. It wants you to react, to spiral, to justify why you can't. Discipline doesn't negotiate with feelings. It acknowledges them, but it moves anyway. It says, yes, I'm tired, but I'll still do the work. That's what separates winners from whiners. Winners feel the same emotions as everyone else. They just don't let those emotions make decisions. They use emotion as fuel, not as a reason to stop. The moment you understand that your feelings are temporary, but your actions are permanent, discipline becomes easier. Every person who has ever built something significant, an empire, a business, a body, a craft, did it by mastering repetition. They did the boring things, the small things, the necessary things over and over until excellence became automatic. That's discipline. Drama wants to be noticed. Discipline wants to be effective. The difference between noise and progress is structure. Drama thrives in chaos. Discipline thrives in systems. The more structure you build into your day, the less room there is for distraction. People think discipline limits freedom, but it's the opposite. Discipline creates freedom by removing the chaos that steals your energy. When your habits run your day, your emotions no longer do. The undisciplined mind is like an untamed animal. It follows every impulse, reacts to every trigger, and runs from every challenge. Discipline tames that mind. It trains you to think before reacting, to plan before acting, to pause before quitting. It transforms your chaos into control. Once discipline becomes your default, life becomes simpler. You stop fighting yourself. You stop negotiating with excuses. You stop wasting time in emotional loops. You simply do what needs to be done. There's no debate, no drama, no delay, just execution. That kind of mental clarity is what creates unstoppable momentum. When you're consistent, the results are inevitable. Drama feeds on attention. The more you focus on your problems, the bigger they grow. The more you focus on your process, the smaller they become. Discipline keeps your eyes on the process. It doesn't ask, "How do I feel about this?" It asks, "What needs to be done right now?" That shift in focus transforms your life. You stop chasing emotion and start chasing execution. You stop measuring days by how dramatic they felt and start measuring them by what you produce. This is how ordinary people achieve extraordinary things. They turn daily discipline into identity. It's not something they do, it's who they are. The abundance mindset thrives on discipline because it understands that consistency creates compound results. Drama drains energy that could have been used for creation. You can't build abundance in a storm of emotional chaos. You build it in the calm repetition of high standards. Discipline is the language of abundance because it speaks through action, not intention. It doesn't wait for inspiration, it creates it. The most fulfilled people are not the ones who feel the best. They're the ones who follow through on what they promise themselves. That integrity builds self-trust, and self-trust builds peace. Drama cannot exist where peace lives. If you want to outsmart your excuses, stop feeding your emotions more than your effort. Every time you choose consistency over chaos, you reinforce strength. Every time you honor your commitment instead of your comfort, you become more powerful. The world will always offer you distractions, detours, and reasons to delay, but discipline keeps you centered. It keeps you focused when life tests you, calm when others panic, and grounded when emotions rise. The longer you practice discipline, the quieter your inner world becomes. You stop chasing highs and start building foundations. That's the secret. Peace and power grow from the same soil, and that soil is discipline. The day you decide to replace drama with discipline is the day your life stops being reactive and starts being intentional. You no longer waste energy on emotional theatrics that produce nothing. You wake up, you execute, you adjust, and you repeat. Over time, this rhythm becomes who you are, a person whose word is law, whose effort is consistent, and whose results speak louder than any excuse ever could. The world doesn't reward those who can talk about their dreams. It rewards those who show up for them every day. Discipline is not punishment, it's self-respect. It's how you prove to yourself that your vision matters more than your emotions. And once you master that, you stop chasing progress and start becoming it. Chapter 10. You don't need motivation. Motivation is a mirage. It shines brightly in the distance, promising energy, inspiration, and clarity. But when you reach for it, it vanishes. Most people spend their lives chasing motivation the way a thirsty traveler chases water in a desert. They wait to feel ready before they start. They wait for excitement before they act. They wait for passion before they commit. And because those feelings are fleeting, they spend more time waiting than doing. Motivation is unreliable because it's emotional, and emotions are temporary. It rises and falls with your mood, your environment, your level of comfort, or the approval you receive from others. If you rely on motivation, you will live a life of inconsistency. Productive one week, distracted the next, inspired in the morning, and defeated by evening. Motivation is not what builds greatness. Discipline, structure, and responsibility do. The truth is that motivation is a luxury, not a requirement. You don't need to feel like doing something in order to do it. The belief that you do is one of the most damaging myths of our time. It convinces you that you can only act when your emotions agree. But emotions are followers, not leaders. They follow action, not the other way around. The greatest performers, creators, and leaders don't depend on motivation because they know it can't be trusted. They depend on systems, habits, routines, commitments that function regardless of how they feel. They don't ask themselves whether they feel inspired. They ask whether they've executed their plan. That is the difference between amateurs and professionals. Amateurs wait for passion. Professionals honor their process. Motivation gives you a spark. Structure keeps you burning. You can be motivated by a goal, a dream, or a cause, but when the excitement fades, as it always does, only consistency will carry you. That's where most people fail. They think the problem is lack of motivation, but the real problem is lack of discipline. They confuse emotional energy with sustainable commitment. Motivation is a push from the outside. Discipline is a pull from the inside. Motivation says, "I feel like it." Discipline says, "I do it anyway." Motivation gives you permission to start. Discipline demands that you continue. The people who achieve the most in life are not those who are constantly inspired, but those who have built the habits that make execution automatic. You don't need motivation to go to work every day. You've built a habit of showing up. You don't need motivation to eat, drive, or shower. You simply do it because it's necessary. But when it comes to building a business, writing a book, improving your health, or chasing a dream, suddenly people wait for motivation. That's not logic, that's avoidance. Motivation is often a socially acceptable disguise for fear. When you say, "I'm waiting to feel ready," what you really mean is, "I'm scared to fail." But readiness never arrives before action, it's built through it. The more you act, the more confident you become, and the more confidence you gain, the less you need motivation at all. The abundance mindset treats motivation as a spark, not a strategy. It uses motivation to begin, but discipline to continue. It understands that waiting to feel inspired is a form of procrastination dressed as self-awareness. The people who accomplish extraordinary things are rarely motivated in the emotional sense. They are often tired, uncertain, and frustrated, but they move anyway. They know that the simple act of starting creates the momentum that feelings cannot. Movement breeds motivation. The more you act, the more energy you generate. You don't wait for energy, you create it. You don't chase inspiration, you trigger it by engaging in the work. The problem with motivation culture is that it romanticizes emotion and demonizes effort. It sells you the idea that if you're not excited, you're not aligned, that if it doesn't feel good, you shouldn't do it. That's false. Growth rarely feels good in the moment. It's uncomfortable, repetitive, and inconvenient, but that discomfort is the forge of greatness. If you only act when it feels good, you'll never develop strength. Strength is born in resistance. The more you face discomfort, the more resilient you become. Discipline thrives where motivation dies. It doesn't rely on inspiration, it relies on integrity. You do what you said you would do because your word matters, not because your emotions approve. Motivation also fades because it's often built on outcomes, not identity. You get excited about a goal, losing weight, making money, or achieving a milestone, but as soon as the novelty wears off or progress slows, motivation collapses. That's because it was tied to external validation. Discipline, however, is internal. It's rooted in who you are, not what you get. When your behavior aligns with your identity, consistency becomes natural. You no longer need to psych yourself up. You simply act in alignment with your standards. You become the kind of person who follows through, no matter what. That's real power, when your commitment no longer depends on conditions. The truth about motivation is that it will always come and go, but structure is forever. Your routines will save you when your emotions betray you. Your habits will sustain you when enthusiasm disappears. Your standards will guide you when doubt creeps in. You don't need to wake up inspired, you need to wake up committed. Commitment is not an emotion, it's a decision that you renew daily. Some days you'll feel powerful, other days exhausted, but your decision remains the same. Each time you act without motivation, you build self-respect. Each time you rely on motivation, you gamble with inconsistency. The difference between momentum and mediocrity is that one shows up regardless of mood, while the other waits for the right mood to show up. The irony is that true motivation is created by discipline itself. Once you begin acting consistently, results appear. Those results create satisfaction, and satisfaction fuels inspiration. But it always begins with action, not feeling. People who say they lack motivation are usually just lacking clarity or accountability. They haven't built systems that make action automatic. If you know exactly what you need to do and when to do it, you won't have time to debate your emotions. You'll simply execute. Structure removes hesitation. Hesitation feeds excuses. Motivation is unreliable because it depends on ideal conditions: rest, comfort, enthusiasm, affirmation. Discipline thrives in chaos. It doesn't require comfort, it builds strength through discomfort. That's why disciplined people achieve more with less. They don't waste energy negotiating with their emotions, they don't need perfect weather, a supportive crowd, or the right playlist. They act out of principle. They understand that motion creates meaning. Each small act compounds into confidence, and confidence fuels momentum. The moment you stop waiting to feel inspired and start acting, everything changes. The work stops being an obligation and becomes an identity. You don't need motivation, you need mastery. You need to master your mornings, your mindset, your habits, and your time. You need to show up when it's inconvenient, when no one's watching, when nothing feels exciting, because that's what separates those who dream from those who do. Every person you admire built their life not on emotion, but on execution. They didn't wait for a spark, they built a fire. You can do the same. Start where you are. Build systems that support your vision. Keep your promises to yourself. Let discipline replace motivation and consistency replace emotion. One day you'll look back and realize that what once required willpower now runs on autopilot. That's when you know you've outsmarted every excuse that ever told you to wait for motivation. You've only heard the beginning. 10 chapters of discipline, resilience, and unstoppable drive. But the story doesn't end here. The rest of Outsmart Your Excuses, Excuses Are for Losers, goes even deeper, unlocking the chapters we didn't release the truths about endurance, patience, adversity, and the mindset that separates dreamers from doers. If these first 10 chapters lit a spark in you, the remaining 16 will set your fire ablaze. Every page is written from scratch, every line born from the belief that real winners never stop. They evolve. Go beyond the audiobook. Step into the full experience. Read or download the complete ebook now, exclusively at audiobooksoffice.com. And keep becoming the kind of person who never quits, no matter how hard the race gets. Your next breakthrough is waiting in the pages you haven't heard yet.